Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I think that the certain subsection of Giants fans who were so desperate for a quarterback had convinced themselves that what Joe Shane said was that they're going to draft a quarterback. That's never actually what he said. He just said, with Tyrod Taylor being a free agent, we'll have to address the quarterback position at some point, whether it's through free agency in the draft. But what those Daniel Jones detractors heard was, is we're drafting Daniel Jones' replacement, and that's all there is to it. And they had convinced themselves of that, wholeheartedly convinced themselves of that. So naturally, the fury when that didn't happen was extensive.
Welcome to the show. It's the Giants Wire podcast. Ryan O'Leary here, joined as always by the great Dan Benton, managing editor of USA Today's Giants Wire. It's our first episode of this pod since the NFL draft. And Dan, just to jump right into it, would you say Giants fans are happy with the six selections the team made, starting obviously with Malik Nabers, or pissed that they didn't come out with a quarterback? What do you think? What would you say about that?
Well, unsurprisingly, I'd say it's pretty much split down the middle. You know, personally, from my perspective, I think they, you know, had a particularly good draft. You know, a couple potential day one starters, some impact players that they managed to get late, some guys who could develop down the line and become, you know, serious contributors. But obviously, there's that big glaring absence of the QB that so many predicted and mocked and projected and speculated that they would ultimately grab in the draft, regardless of who it was and at what position they managed to go in and get them. I think most fans, even Daniel Jones fans and supporters, believe, based on everything leading up to the draft, that a quarterback would be a pick almost guaranteed. And obviously, we'll get into the trade rumors, you know, throughout this podcast, but I think 50% of the fan base is pretty angry, and the vast majority of them are stunned that the Giants didn't grab a quarterback, especially considering that, you know, J.J. McCarthy was sitting right there at number six, and there had been all of those reports and that speculation that he was, quote-unquote, the guy the Giants were going to go get if they couldn't get Jaden Daniels in a trade, which, again, we'll talk about shortly.
Yeah, there's so much to get to, but here's an opening take just to get the conversation started, Dan, and I have not thrown this take at you yet. I know the reports came out. ESPN's Mike Reese was one of them reporting it, covers the Patriots, that the Giants tried to go up with the Patriots. They offered number six overall and their first rounder next year. I think most Giants fans obviously have heard about this. They were trying to get up to number three. And what we have to assume would be to select Drake May. And I know Adam Schefter tried to tell us that they were going after Joe Alt. And we could talk about that later, Dan. I don't believe that.
Right. Drake May was
yeah, of course, earlier, of course. By the
way, not Jaden Daniels.
But as you know, Dan, I am a Patriots fan, so I can come at this from the Patriots fan's perspective. And when I will say this, after the draft, when I heard that the Vikings and Giants were trying to come up to three and there was reports, I was like, oh no, what were they turning down? I know we're desperate for a quarterback. I know, but what were we turning down? What were people offering us? I was losing it, right? I'm like, I don't want to even open up this article to read what the offer was. And then I heard about the offer and I said, fake offer. Fugazi. Like, the Giants offered number six and next year's first, and that's it, to come get Drake May? What?
Well, the rumor was they also were going to include their second round pick in this draft as well.
Oh, so that would make a little more sense. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Because from Mike Reese reported that it was just those two picks, right? Six and next year's first. That's not enough.
It was six. Their second round pick in this draft, a first round pick next year, plus a swap of late round picks, although it was never discussed what those particular picks were.
That makes a little more sense. So it's not as, I thought it was like a PR spin fake offer. You know, that's where I was going with that. Let me ask you this, Dan. Do you think the Giants were ever really serious about going up to number three? Do you think they were like, we are going to do whatever it takes to get up there, and the Patriots just said, we're hanging up the phone? Okay, me either. Go ahead. Tell me why.
No, I don't think that. Well, because I think if they were going to do whatever it took, they would have done whatever it took.
You know, exactly.
The whole do whatever it takes notion, that means you get the job done. that means you literally do whatever it takes to get that job done. So obviously Joe Shane and the Giants pumped the brakes on quote unquote doing whatever it took to get up there, because if they wanted it, they would have done it. That said, I don't know. Listen, we've seen this with Joe Shane before. We've seen it in his negotiations with Saquon Barkley specifically. We've talked about this at length over the years. Like, he's a guy who will negotiate to a point and then he'll stop negotiating. And I feel like that's sort of what happened in this particular instance, where he already knew he was going to be high taxed because the teams ahead of them knew that if they traded up, it was going to be for a quarterback. And he acknowledged that in his pre-draft press conference, that there's going to be that quarterback tax when you trade up. So based on the trade value chart alone, he had already been offering up more than the value of the actual trade. Again, having known that that was going to be necessary to move up. And when that got rebuffed, and I think more importantly, when we learned what Minnesota's offer was and that got rebuffed, there was 0% chance that the Giants were ever going to pony up what was necessary to make that trade happen. And I think we discussed that even on our last podcast, that even if the Giants made a maneuver to move up, there was going to be a hard stopping point for them, and ultimately they weren't going to have enough ammunition to make that trade, and that's ultimately what played out.
Yeah, so maybe Shane just went as far as he was going to go. But yeah, I think that the trade value chart is one thing, but the situation is another, right? You got to factor in the Patriots situation, them being so desperate at quarterback, right, Dan, that they're sitting there with a chance to pick their guy. Yeah. And I think we could all agree the tier between Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, it there's a new tier. It drops to J.J. McCarthy, Michael Penix, Bo Nix. Bo Nix probably further down the list, Broncos.
If I'm being completely honest, though, from my own perspective, I would say that tier list starts with, you know, to the top tier. Tier one starts with Caleb Williams and goes to Jaden Daniels and then drops to Drake May, who I think really, for whatever reason, in Giants land got overhyped. You know, listen, the kid has a very high ceiling. There's no denying that. He also has a really low floor and has a pretty significant bust potential. And I think that had to also have been factored in because Joe Shane is a realist. I mean, I don't think anybody in that building was convincing themselves that he was as good as the top two quarterbacks taken. I think he was closer to the second tier of quarterbacks than the first tier of quarterbacks. And I think that also played a role in what it was that the Giants were offering.
Well, first of all, Dan, how dare you say that about my quarterback, Drake May? How dare you? But no, you've been consistent on that. You said that before the draft, so that's totally consistent. But I do think, like, whether you agree Drake May is up there with Williams and Daniels or not, I think there is a drop-off between May and the next group, and that's what happened. So you have to factor in that situation, especially the Patriots situation, them being there with a chance to draft. The clear pick at number three was Drake May. They have a chance to pick that player. They need him. If they're coming off that pick, it's going to take a lot more than, even more than the Vikings offered. I was surprised that the Vikings offered a good deal, but they still had, they wanted some mid-round draft picks in return. And it just,
oh, is that what? Okay.
Yeah. I didn't realize that. So they offered 21, 11 next year's first, but they also wanted some picks back in the middle rounds. And the Patriots said, get out of here. So as a fan, just to like wrap up that point I was making earlier, I'm glad Elliott Wolf hung up the phone and said, no, we're just going to take the player. I think after learning of the offers, I don't think anything was, I don't care what the trade value chart says, you know, like I don't, given the Patriots situation, I think they were right to just take the player and hang up the phone. But let me ask you this, Dan, JJ McCarthy or Malik Nabers?
I actually believe in JJ McCarthy. I think that it's going to take some time for him to develop, but at number six, again, we said it on our last podcast. If anybody hadn't heard it, they can go back and listen to it. We discussed that exact scenario, and the answer was always universally, you take the true number one wide receiver that this team hasn't had since Odell Beckham Jr., as opposed to spending that number six pick on a developmental quarterback who is then going to at least sit 1 year behind Daniel Jones, and you don't add back any offensive firepower. So it was the right choice for the Giants to make there.
I agree 100%. And we did lay it out, and we said, you know, we wanted Nabers. Did you want a Dunze too? You were high on a Dunze.
I liked either one of them. I struggled with who would be a better fit for the Giants offensive system. But again, flip a coin, I think they're both talented, high-end, true number one wide receivers. Neighbors, you know, he offers some things that Odunze doesn't. Odunze offers some things that Neighbors doesn't. I don't think he could have gone wrong with either one of those picks, and I'm perfectly content with the Giants selecting Neighbors.
Yeah, me too. I love the pick. I was excited when they made it. I was worried they were going to take J.J. McCarthy, Dan, just based, that's just our opinion of it. We wanted the top end wide receiver over the over the quarterback that we weren't sure, you know, over the fourth quarterback, I guess you could say. But I do understand Giants fans being annoyed, pissed, whatever, with the way we laid it out in the beginning of the show, because wasn't it kind of presented to them that the Giants were going to address quarterback? Like, Joe Shade actually like said those words. It was like they were, we thought they were going to address that position given Daniel Jones' injury history. Yeah. And all we got, Dan, was Drew Locke. So like they didn't even go after Spencer Rattler or something in the late rounds, you know? Like they just passed on quarterback altogether, and they're like, you know, we'll deal with it. Guys, we have a plan, deal with it, Giants fans. So I do, to that point, I get why Giants fans are a little pissed. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that the certain subsection of Giants fans who were so desperate for a quarterback had convinced themselves that what Joe Shane said was that they're going to draft a quarterback. That's never actually what he said. He just said, with Tyrod Taylor being a free agent, we'll have to address the quarterback position at some point, whether it's through free agency in the draft. But what those Daniel Jones detractors heard was, is we're drafting Daniel Jones's replacement, and that's all there is to it. And they had convinced themselves of that, wholeheartedly convinced themselves of that. So naturally, the fury when that didn't happen was extensive.
It was. So we come out again. We end up coming out of it with just Drew Locke. And I do feel like after reading through some Giants Twitter, getting ready for the pod, Dan, whew, we have to have a conversation about Drew Locke. First of all,
again, it's a repeat scenario. This same subsection of fans is now convincing themselves that Drew Locke is going to be the guy to win the starting job over a healthy Daniel Jones. And I'll be the first to say it. That's not going to happen.
I mean, I know everybody loves the backup quarterback, especially Giants fans. There's a rather odd infatuation with the backup quarterback and for Giants fans. You know, that's just something that's gone on throughout the last couple decades. But to be clear, Drew Locke is a downgrade from Tyrod Taylor. There is no world where Locke outperforms Daniel Jones and wins the job in camp, quote unquote. You would have to be better than Daniel Jones to do that, Dan. And Drew Locke is not only is he not better than Daniel Jones, he's just not good. He's just not. I mean, the Broncos tried to force feed him their job. They're like, please, would you just please be our franchise quarterback? He couldn't do it. Did he lose out to Teddy Bridgewater? You know what I mean? Like he couldn't do it in Denver. And then he gets traded to Seattle in the Russell Wilson deal and he couldn't beat out Geno Smith. So like, what are we talking about here? Drew Locke is not a guy. And just my take on Drew Locke, Dan, is, if he's starting games for the Giants in 2024, that means DJ is not healthy, and that means we're headed for another disaster of a season, right? So that's, I just think we have to be honest. Like, Drew Locke is not beating out anything unless Daniel Jones is injured, and then we're screwed anyway. So there's that. We just had to put that out there because the DJ versus Drew Locke stuff, I can't do it.
You've seen this actually among even some DJ detractors recently, where they're having to remind angry Giants fans, like being forced to defend Daniel Jones against these fans who are so illogically hateful towards this man that they have convinced themselves that anyone can step in and perform better than Daniel Jones can, to the point now where I'm seeing commentary like, just give the keys of the car to Tommy DeVito because it can't be worse than Daniel Jones, or just give the keys of the franchise to Drew Locke because he can't be worse than Daniel Jones. Again, going back to what we were just talking about with the NFL draft, where they had convinced themselves out of anger, essentially, that the Giants are going to draft a quarterback, they are now pivoting and convincing themselves that Drew Locke is somehow going to win the starting job, when again, that's not going to happen. And as you mentioned, he's not just not as good of a quarterback as Daniel Jones. I do firmly believe that he is a downgrade from Tyrod Taylor, as you said as well. And I think one of the biggest faults in Drew Locke's game is the fact that he's a statue behind center. And in order to succeed in New York, and I think somehow people have forgotten about this, you need to scramble and run because you're not going to survive behind this offensive line unless it somehow magically turns around this coming season. So if you think 80 whatever sacks it was last year was a lot, put Drew Lock in there for 17 games and let me know how many sacks the Giants give up then.
It does remind me of the Broncos situation last year where they bench Russell Wilson, Dan. They bring in Jarrett Stidham. And Broncos fans are like, oh, Jarrett Stidham, maybe he's the guy. It's like, no, it's Jarrett Stidham is Drew Lock. They're the same guy. You know what I mean? They're backups. They're fine, I guess, but they're not going to do anything for you. That's Drew Lock. He is Jarrett Stidham. You know, he's just a backup quarterback. That's what he is.
It.
Yeah.
He's a backup.
Can we just not? But that brings up another topic coming out of the draft here. You just mentioned the offensive line. It kind of is what it is. They addressed it in free agency, Dan, but not only did they not draft an offensive lineman, they didn't draft offensive or defensive lineman in the draft.
Yeah,
they're the only team in the entire draft to not address the trenches. Yeah. What do you think about that?
I was shocked. I thought, you know, I wasn't sold on the fact that they would draft an offensive lineman. I thought, you know, maybe a late round guy was possible. The chips obviously didn't fall that way, especially since they had to prepare for the potential that Darren Waller doesn't play this year. So they had to address the tight end position, which again is a topic we'll probably touch on here. I was, however, more surprised they didn't grab someone for the defensive line. I really thought that they had placed an emphasis on that in their pre-draft scouting. And, you know, they kind of followed through with that same trend at the other positions, whether it be wide receiver, even a running back, because they had, you know, expressed interest and then scouted extensively some of the running backs. But yeah, that didn't hold true along the defensive line. And I was kind of surprised by that. And I do feel like it's an area that the Giants still have to address at some point before the regular season starts. They've got to add someone along the defensive line, whether it's a true nose tackle to prevent Dexter Lawrence from taking 90%+ of the snaps again next year, or whether it's a defensive end or whatever it may be, or just maybe a rotational defensive tackle, whatever position it is you want to talk about, I do feel like they need to add another big body in there.
Them not coming out of this draft with a tackle, Dan, is that a win for Evan Neal?
I don't know if I'd call it a win, because I do think that his job is still very much at risk. It is apparent at this point, especially with the way that the draft played out, that they're going to give him an opportunity to not only win that job, but keep that job. So it's going to be on him to finally, you know, figure it out and get it right. I don't know how long that leash is going to be, but I can pretty much guarantee you it's not going to be a full 17 games if he continues to play the way he's been playing.
Yeah, you could say that again. So it was interesting, right? When they get to day two after drafting Neighbors, they turn their focus to the secondary. They draft a safety and a corner. It just felt like it was kind of let's fill out the depth chart based on, you know, guys we lost, right? They picked Tyler Newbin. We can all project him replacing Xavier McKinney.
I think that's a good pick.
Yeah, yep.
Good
yep. Pick. I like Tyler Newbin. They take him replacing Xavier McKinney. They draft Drew Phillips in the third round, corner out of Kentucky. I guess Adoree Jackson is who he replaces in the slot. They have to snag some Darren Waller insurance in the fourth round. They pick Theo Johnson, the tight end out of Penn State. We'll get to him. And then they add one of your favorite players in this draft class, Dan, Tyrone Tracy, in the fifth round, and, you know, loading up on running backs after losing Saquon Barkley. So they definitely addressed needs coming out of free agency portion of the offseason, Dan, in the draft on day two and three.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, I think the way that you laid it out is actually perfect. They grabbed, you know, the wide receiver, like you said, in round one, which was a need, not necessarily replacement, but then they focused essentially on those replacement players for their next four picks. And I'm not 100% sold on, you know, Drew Phillips in the role that he's going to play. I don't know that if he ends up in the slot that spending a third round pick on a slot receiver and moving someone like Cordell Flott, which Joe Stein said was a possibility, to the outside is necessarily the answer. I think they needed a more prominent, you know, outside cornerback. And they just, I don't know whether it was just the dominoes didn't fall the way they wanted it to based on their own draft board or what have you. I'm just not sold that was the answer at the pick. And that's not necessarily a knock on Drew Phillips. I think that he's a good player, his athletic testing aside, which was a result of an injury. But I just don't know if he was specifically what they needed for this defense. But again, they did need to add defensive backs. They added the two. Theo Johnson's sort of a a developmental guy. I don't know how much of an impact he's going to have in year one. He'll certainly see some time. I think long-term that could be a potentially good pick, because whether or not Darren Waller retires this year or not, you know, he's not long for the NFL at this point, one way or another. So, you know, that was kind of a look down the line pick where, you know, they have a chance to mold this guy into what they want him to be. And then, as you mentioned, Tyrone Tracy, who I think was the best pick outside of Neighbors in this draft, just because he's got a little bit of everything, and there's a lot about him that I'm excited about. His ability to punt return, kick return, play gunner, play other special teams positions, play wide receiver, play in the slot, play outside. He could do a little bit of everything. I wouldn't pigeonhole him to any specific position. I just want to call him a weapon because that's what he is. And he's kind of a unique player that the Giants have maybe never had before.
Yeah, you were telling me about Tyrone Tracy before we hit record, and I'm literally in the middle of a dynasty draft, rookie draft for my dynasty league, and I'm like, I got to get this Tyrone Tracy on my team. he sounds like a real player. So you're high on him. I like that. Let's circle back to Darren Waller for a second, Dan. Mm-hmm. I'm annoyed. I think a lot of Giants fans are annoyed.
Listen, they don't agree about many things, but I think they agree about that at this point.
He came in last year. The whole offense sucked. I mean, it's hard to have a NFL offense when you can't block. And the Giants could not block. So the offense was a disaster all year. But did Darren Waller live up to expectations? I would say last year was underwhelming. He had more hamstring injuries. And now he is hanging this potential retirement over the Giants' head. I know there's probably stuff going on in his personal life, Dan. I don't want to like speculate on that because I don't know what's going on with Darren Waller. But the fact that months ago, there was reports that he was considering retirement, that the Giants weren't giving him any type of timetable. They were letting him figure it out. And the fact that as we speak today on May 8th, we're still not sure if he's going to play. And the Giants are just operating as if he's not and drafting guys like Theo Johnson, you know, in the fourth round. It's like, isn't this kind of annoying? Like, can Darren Waller just freaking make his decision? And honestly, Dan, as we speak right now, go retire. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if that's too harsh, but that's kind of, I'm just annoyed at this whole situation. I just wish he would make a decision. I would like to know if we have our starting tight end or not.
I think you have taken the emotion or the frustration out of it from whether it's a fan perspective or a Giants perspective, just on an even playing field. I will say this, and this is something I firmly believe. If you have any questions about whether or not you have what it takes to commit to the game of football, you no longer have what it takes to commit to the game of football. Okay, it's not one of those situations where you're half out the door and think you can contribute and still be an impactful player, because you can't. If you're thinking about retiring and you're undecided at this point still, Michael Strahan back in 2007 may be the exception to this rule, but predominantly throughout the history of not just football but of sports, when you're half out the door, just finish leaving the door. Just walk out the door and close it behind you, because you have to commit to these sports, to this sport in particular, 100%, because it's a true grind. And you put yourself at risk, you put your teammates at risk, you put jobs at risk if you come in and do something half-assed. So with all due respect to the personal issues that he's gone through and is going through, I think it's his best decision for himself personally at this point and for the Giants organization to retire. And I think it would have been even better for him to have made that decision prior to the draft, so that the team that traded for you could prepare to replace you.
Yeah.
Either that, or if you were going to come back, then perhaps use that draft pick on a different spot, like a defensive tackle, for example, that they desperately needed, since there were only six picks to go around. That pick was very important, and that pick was made of Theo Johnson with Darren Waller's uncertainty in mind, and that is unfair to the franchise.
I loved your point there. Like, usually NFL players will contemplate retirement, but it's just so ingrained in them, Dan. They've been doing it. That's what they've been doing for so long that contemplation ends pretty quickly. And if they're going to come back, they usually come back quick, right? They're contemplating retirement. Then they're like, I gotta play. You know what I mean?
Well, Tom Brady's retirement didn't even last.
Yeah, exactly.
Long.
Even Brady was like 45, 46. Waller's like, this thing's dragging out for months. So I'm sure there's stuff going on with him. But you know, he's a guy that he overcame like some pretty tough substance abuse when he was with the Raiders, right? So there's a history there with Darren Waller. I don't know if he's struggling with some stuff. And if that's the case, fine. But like, step away and let us know what's going on. Again, we'd like to know if our starting tight end's going to play. Darren Waller makes a difference for the Giants this year. So that's just something that's annoying. No, you know, I don't want to dump anything on Theo Johnson. What's going on?
From a fan standpoint, from somebody who wants the Giants to succeed, I think the best outcome would have been for Darren Waller to find within himself that he wanted to 100% commit to the New York Giants, to commit to the game of football, to commit to being healthy, and then going out there and teaming up with the likes of Wandale Robinson and Jalen Hyatt and Malik Nabers and you know, Tyrone Tracy. That's exciting. That would be exciting. But unfortunately, we've been left with, well, we don't know if he's going to be there. Now our starting tight end is either going to be Daniel Bellinger or a developmental long-term late or mid-round draft pick. And it really doesn't have that same flair as a healthy, productive, committed Darren Waller. So not only has it kind of handicapped the team in their roster building process this offseason and even moving forward as we speak now, but it also potentially takes away from what could be. And let's just be honest, the Giants need as much successful offensive firepower as they could possibly get their hands on.
I want Waller back, but like, even if he came out in a week and said, I'm going to play, it's like, dude, why? Those last few months were annoying. Yeah, exactly.
Right. That's kind of what I mean at this point, too. I feel like it's gone on for such a long time now that if you don't feel committed at this point on May 8th, as of this recording, with rookie minicamp starting in a couple days and mandatory minicamp coming up and the voluntary offseason workout program already underway, like, if you're not fully committed at this point, I don't know what's going to make you fully committed. I don't know where that motivation is suddenly going to come from as you go through a divorce, as unfortunate as that may be.
Yep. Another guy, Darius Slayton, you guys had some articles on Giants Wire about Slayton skipping voluntary workouts. Dan, he's looking for a contract extension. He was the top receiver on the team until they drafted Nabers. But is just a example of Joe Shane playing some hardball. Like, you know, we're going to get you at the number we want. And oh, by the way, here's Malik Nabers. We just drafted him 6th overall. There was some speculation that the Giants could be looking or have offers to trade Darius Slayton. Should they, Dan? Should they have already traded him? What do you think about the Slayton situation?
I never thought they were going to trade him. I thought those rumors were ridiculous. That was never going to happen. He's the most consistent offensive player that this team has had since 2019. And that's just the reality.
Yes, it is. It is true.
And that's just a fact. And I understand where he's coming from, because when everything else around him has failed, he has continued to put up almost identical, like almost unbelievably consistent numbers every single year. And I think he does deserve a little bit more money. Maybe not. I don't know what he's seeking. I can't speak for him. He doesn't deserve wide receiver money, money, because he's not a wide receiver one. He's filled that role for the Giants because they've struggled so greatly in the roster building process through multiple regimes. But he is a top end number two. And if the Giants had a productive number one, whether or not that was a tight end or that is Malik Nabers going forward, if Slayton puts up the numbers that he has put up every single year, there's no one on this planet that would look at that guy and say, boy, he is a bad number two. He is exactly the kind of number two that you want on your team, and he deserves that number two money. And I think that's what he's looking for. And I think he has ground to stand on. I'm sure Shane will play hardball because that's just the nature of the game when it comes to him as a general manager. But Slayton has firm ground to stand on in his demand for a different or better contract because of the level of consistency and in terms of his production that he's put up year in and year out.
Yeah, I'm hoping they work it out. I think Slayton fits in well, you know, with Nabers and Wandale Robinson and Hyatt. You got a lot of different kind of receivers, right? They're not all the same guy.
But I think that's one of the problems with the perception when it comes to Darius Slayton is that he's been forced as a number two wide receiver to play that number one wide receiver role, and he's never produced like a number one wide receiver. And that's kind of skewed, like I said, skewed the perception of him, whether it's outside the Giants or even within the Giants fan base, because they have different expectations set for him based on the role he's played. But he's always played in the wrong role. And I agree. I think he is almost the ideal receiver to play on this team as a number two to Nabers when you have guys like Wandale Robinson and Jalen Hyatt, who also fit well in the spread offense. Wandale, I think, is going to have a tremendous season. And again, imagine how great all this would be if a healthy, competent, and committed Darren Waller was back. Not to beat a dead horse, but when you actually sit here and talk about all the talent that they have and the unique ways in which they can mix and match those guys, it's hard not to think about what if.
No, I know a lot of Giants fans are annoyed about them not coming out of the draft with a quarterback. I've been annoyed about the Waller situation. That's really been driving me crazy. Again, hopefully a resolution's coming there. Another little note since the draft that I wanted to get to, Dan, before we end this one, was Gettleman chiming in on Dave Gettleman chimed in on NFL analysts who grade every team after the draft. So I was reading this article, I was dying laughing. I just wanted to get to this. He said he finally broke down and got a subscription to The Athletic because it was only a dollar for the first month. So Dave Gettleman said, okay, I'll spend the dollar to get these draft grades from The Athletic. And then here's his quote, Dan. You got this guy giving every team grades, but you got to be kidding me. Who are you? What have you done? When have you put your nuts on the line? But sadly, you got owners listening to these clowns and even GMs listening to these clowns. So that's the end quote. So Gettleman calling writers, bloggers, whatever you want to call it, calling these people clowns for giving team grades and actually saying that sometimes they influence owners, Dan, is in GMs. I do agree with Gettleman to a point where draft grades are kind of ridiculous. Like, you know, I saw one expert grading in real time during the draft. He was saying, you know, first round, he gave the Bears an A- for Caleb Williams because he liked Jaden Daniels better. It's like, okay, so you're just going to knock somebody because he didn't exactly go based on your rankings. Everyone's got different rankings. I think the draft grades are kind of ridiculous. I get that. But Gettleman, talking about putting your nuts on the line, that's where I thought it was kind of he went a little overboard. It's like, Dave, what was your winning percentage with the Giants again? Who laying his nuts on the line? Like, what is Gettleman laying his nuts on the line? You know what I mean, Dan? So that, what do you think about the Gettleman comments? I found this hilarious.
I struggled with it, honestly, because on one hand, I do agree that the draft grades immediately after the draft or even live are kind of foolish. I understand why they're done. Even we at Giants Wire did them. Fans eat it up. And you give the fans what they want. So I understand that from a general perspective. The struggles that I had with what Gettleman said is, one, he was specifically talking about The Athletic and Dane Brugler, which was a weird target to take. There are plenty of bloggers out there that you could have taken aim at, but you took aim at one of the guys who spends probably more time scouting than NFL scouts spend scouting. So there must be something about Brugler or The Athletic that has, you know, ruffled Gettleman's feathers somewhere along the way. I don't know what it is, but it was a weird target. It was a weird, you know, aim to take. I also found it weird that he said he only got the subscription because it was a dollar, because, like, this guy hasn't been paid like a champion to ruin organizations for the last however long. So it's not like he's short on cash. So I found that to be a little odd, too. But the other issue that I took as someone who has in the past defended Dave Gettleman is that he still lacks complete and total self-awareness. It's as if he doesn't remember what his 10 years as Carolina Panthers head coach and their general manager and New York Giants general manager were like, where he developed teams, rosters, players that despised him as a person, where he buried franchises, where he made decisions that are still crippling those franchises, where he refused to adjust to the times and adapt his way of going about things. And that is frustrating because at one point, and I've said this before, Dave Gettleman was a good scout, but he became so egotistical that he thought he was the smartest man in the room and there was no one on his same level. And we talked about this before the show. We kind of joked that we're never impressed with the fans who armchair GM and say that they could do what this coach could do or that coordinator could do or what that general manager could do. But Dave Gettleman is one of the unique instances where pretty much any one of us could have taken on his job and produced exactly the same that he did. So emerging from the rock that he was hiding under to take aim at those people and still prop himself up like this brilliant man who wasn't quote unquote fired for unbelievable failure and then never allowed back in the NFL. I thought that was a very clear misjudgment on Gettleman's part. He probably should have just stayed quiet. When you live in a glass clown car, you don't throw stones.
That's a good one. Yeah. Yeah. Could I have been the GM of the Giants and come up with a 0.292 winning percentage over my tenure? I think I could do that, yeah. Dan. I would like to bet that I could figure it out. I think I could
you
do that.
You could have done literally nothing, nothing, and been as successful as Dave Gettleman was.
I just can't get over the line of, you know, when is this guy putting his nuts on the line? It's like, okay, Dave, if you're putting your quote unquote laying your nuts on the line each year, you were the GM of the Giants, like, what's happening to your nuts each year as you continue to fail? You know what I mean? Like, eventually you don't have any nuts left to lay on the line. And maybe that's what happened to Dave. But I just found that to be a funny one. Dave Gettleman back in the
news. I'll tell you what. I did not have Gettleman coming out and firing shots on my bingo card.
Yeah. I didn't have Gettleman talking about his nuts just, on my bingo card either. Yeah.
It just continues to prove how detached from reality he had become over the years. Because in the end, he thought he was still as good as he was in the beginning and failed to recognize that those two things were so far apart at that point that he was just speaking into the wind.
Oh, well, we will miss those Joe Judge years, though. Thank you, Dave. It was a good time. Good time to be a Giants fan back then. Anything else on your chest, Dan, as we wrap this thing up? You know, they drafted a linebacker out of UCLA in the sixth round. So there's that. We didn't talk about him, but anything else going on with the Giants that you want to get off your chest before we wrap this thing up? Are you good?
I do find it curious that we didn't touch on Darius Muyiseau, a little bit of an undersized linebacker, but I do think he's going to play a prolific role on special teams, and he kind of has the leadership qualities that you want for a defense. I don't know where he's going to fit in or if he'll ever be a full-time starter, but I do think that was another good pick by Joe Shane, just because of the guy's tenacity. It's something that you very clearly need on the defensive side of the ball or on any team, period. So I do think that was an interesting pick, and I do think that he'll have a role on the Giants and for the Giants for quite a while now. The kind of guys that he's got to beat out are like Cam Brown, and no disrespect to Cam Brown. He is a good special teams player. I just think the young tenacity that this guy brings is beneficial for the Giants in that particular role. And who knows what happens long term. You know, he beefs up in an NFL locker room, and we'll see what kind of role he has in the future, but I do think that was a good pick, and he wasn't intentionally overlooked in this podcast.
No, we just had a lot to get to, you know, Gettleman and Waller and all this crap, you know, just all kinds of stuff going on. What's next for Giants?
One other thing I want to get off my chest, actually. Yeah. As a man who's always been a big-time Saquon Barkley supporter, I thought Saquon sniping at Giants fans because they booed him at a basketball game where Knicks fans had completely taken over the building, by the way, in Philly. Him getting upset about that kind of made me laugh. Like, where have you played your entire career?
Get ready for it there. Yeah,
Saquon. Like, you know how Giants fans feel about Eagles fans, how Knicks fans feel about Sixers fans, how New Yorkers feel about Philly. You are in for a bad time when you come to MetLife Stadium.
Seriously, it's like you know they hate you now. Like, you picked the wrong jersey, and it's fine. It's totally his. It was his choice. It was his free agency. The Giants, you know, jerked him around a little bit at the negotiating table. They didn't want to give him his number.
Hey, listen, let's walk back in time a little bit. We said it last year. He should have taken the deal that was offered to him.
You've been all over this. Yes, go.
I have said that. I will repeat that, because then he whined, well, they didn't make me an offer. Well, they had. Your agency failed you. You failed you. It wasn't on the Giants at the time. And you could cry that they didn't offer you anything this time around, but you're a year older. You're a year more injured. And you play running back in the NFL, I'm sorry, you didn't deserve the contract that they had offered you previously. And with the Eagles offering what they did, there was no point for Joe Shane basically slap Saquon in the face, so we just let him go. And I think that was a respectful move from the Giants' part, but by not insulting him. So the fact that he takes offense and takes aim at the fans and then whines that the Giants didn't offer him anything, like Gettleman, I feel like you're a little detached from reality.
Yes, Giants fans loved you when you were here. And then you left for Philly, and now they hate you, and they're going to boo you. Yeah. We are like children in that regard. That is exactly what's going to happen. We appreciated you then and we hate you now. And there's no in between. We, in that regard, Dan, we are Giants fans. We are like children. That's how we're going to react to you. Deal with it. You knew that was coming.
I don't think that's unique to New York Philly.
No, either, no, that's sports.
Exactly. It's not like you went to the Los Angeles Rams. You'd still probably be booed when you played the Giants, cheered maybe before the game. But you went to the Eagles, man. Like, what do you think is to happen when you go to their chief rival? Like, fans aren't going to be like, you know what? Maybe I'll root for the Eagles now. No, that's never going to happen.
So I got a great comp.
I don't know why you're upset.
I got a great comp for you, Dan. Again, I'm a Pats fan. Grew up as a Patriots fan. Curtis Martin. Oh, God, was he adored in New England. We loved Curtis Martin. As soon as he put on the Jets uniform, dead to us, dead. You know what I mean? And that's just what it is. Sorry, Saquon. Boo. You know what I mean? Boo. Booing your ass.
I'm sorry. Like, I can't believe that hurt your feelings. Like, I don't understand how you don't understand. That's kind of how I feel about that.
Again, like you said, he'll understand when he comes to East Rutherford, New Jersey next year with the Eagles. So what's up next for Giants Wire, Dan? You looking out for schedule watch?
Schedule will come next week. We got rookie mini camp on Friday and Saturday. Lots of tryouts, tons of tryouts. So there'll be a lot of, you know, talk about what goes on there, who could potentially earn a roster spot. The Giants actually have 91 right now, so there's a transaction pending as of this recording. So there could be some roster maneuvering here in the next couple of days, over the next week. And then after the schedule release, things are going to get quiet. You'll have mandatory mini camp, but, you know, for you and I, for the Giants, for the players and coaches and executives, we're almost at true legitimate vacation time.
Mandatory vacation for Dan Benton.
Yeah, that's right. I can't wait for that.
You deserve it, man. For Dan Benton, I'm Ryan O'Leary. Thanks for joining us. As always, we appreciate you. We'll catch you next time.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.